So that again was the end of 19300. If there's nothing further to deliberate on in that chapter, I can move on to 19400. All right. The first comment was actually a pretty early on comment that stated our mass wasting and run out zones. Again, this is geologically hazardous areas, sorry, were not being adequately addressed. And so we had actually addressed that in our 3.8 draft. So I did want to point that out, that a criteria for a landslide hazard indicator was added, that areas with potential landslide runout distance greater than the slope height, as measured from the toe of slope or as determined by a geological hazards geotechnical report, would be one of the criteria. Another comment we received actually fairly frequently was that, how do I calculate the slope? What does that look like? How do I do that? Definitely concur. We in the appendix for this matrix, there was a very rough draft of what those diagrams could look like. Obviously, some of the things would need to be labeled better and that kind of thing, but that's what we would propose doing for the final version, is providing some diagrams to ex better show how slope is calculated.
So when I looked at this, this looked like an example. This isn't what will be in the code per se. This is okay.
Yeah, that's just kind of to give you an idea of
Yeah.
what we mean by diagrams, and yeah, that was, like I said, very rough indication.
Kathleen, before we get into specifically geological hazards or like critical aquifer recharge areas, I know that the languaging in the COA was CAO, sorry, it has that, you talked about it earlier, the policy kind of avoid, minimize, mitigate, right? And that used to be languaging specifically under wetlands and streams. My understanding is now that's moved up in the umbrella to be right kind of under the overarching concept policy for the critical area ordinance as a whole, which would now imply that it could be applied to slopes and critical area aquifer recharge areas. Is there a way to, when's the right time to talk about the concern of avoiding slope, for example?
Yeah, so the mitigation sequencing is what you're talking about, and it should apply to all critical areas. You should be avoiding critical slopes, should be minimizing your impact on those slopes, and then mitigating for any impact. So it still applies. It's not a wetland, but it's still a critical area. So avoidance and minimization is still applicable.
Okay, but with just thinking about how to utilize the land that we have remaining, what made us move it outside of just wetlands and streams and move it now into all the applicable categories? What I was actually thinking about is, let's say somebody comes in on a sloping lot, there's a lot of developments that are in this phase, and you said, well, you have to avoid slopes. Well, we engineer roads on slopes so that fire trucks could get into a neighborhood from both ends. What happens if we accidentally are now saying, nope, you have to avoid slopes? It's a big concern from everybody that I know in the development community when you say avoid slopes versus we engineer roads that have retaining walls all the time. What's going to happen if by moving that mitigation sequencing languaging out from under wetlands and streams and into the top of the CAO? The definition of avoid, minimize, mitigate is defined by the Washington State Department of Ecology, and at the federal level, defined by the Clean Water Act. Neither one of those apply to slopes.
So, by meeting the minimum slope buffers and setbacks that are in code, or providing a geological report that says that it's going to be safe, that's a demonstration of avoidance and minimization. Now, there could be cases where it's not safe, and that's why those geotechnical reports are there to say, yes, this is a landslide hazard area. It can't be avoided. Here's how we're going to minimize the potential impacts of that. So I don't think it's as hard of a hurdle as maybe is being assumed, but
Can I be a little clear in the question? Why did we move it out from underneath just wetlands and streams?
Well, originally with wetlands and streams, I'm talking about avoidance of, say, impacts to buffers or ecological functions that wasn't necessarily clear in those sections. So we did reference mitigation, and there's a definition of mitigation, which would then point to avoidance and minimization. Or to clarify, I mean, I think wetland section did have it spelled out a bit. But it wasn't spelled out in Fish and Wildlife Habitat Conservation Areas. It pointed to the definition of mitigation. So we wanted it to be clear for those sections. And then
Can we
so we could simply
add it to
reference.
those sections instead of putting it at the top where now it applies to geotech and critical aquifer recharge areas? Because again, the concept was a definition from the Department of Ecology and the Clean Water Act at the federal level. That's not geotech. I know what a geotech does, and yes, they're going to say, the slope is of this type, and water quality, or sorry, soil quality, and the pitch of it. And so, yes, we have to, design a road or retain. I'm actually speaking out of concern for your department on the from the legal perspective, that something that was defined for wetlands and streams is now being applied just because we moved it to a number of other things that it wasn't intended for.
Before I add anything, Dan or Alexandra, did you have any context on that change that we can provide?
Yeah, I mean, the context I would just provide is like the mitigation sequencing component is intended to be applied to all critical areas. The rationale for avoidance is different depending upon the type of critical area. I mean, the critical areas protection standards for streams and wetlands obviously have habitat components to it, right? A lot of the geohazard components have health and human safety components to it. So avoidance is important to consider, but it doesn't mean that you can't do the proposed project. In many cases, the proposed project is just in it on itself, right? Just negates the avoidance factor, right? So that the having mitigation sequencing is important to all types of critical areas, but it's kind of for different reasons. And again, I think it's a process that justifies going through the proper analysis of the rationale for the project and how it's minimized and mitigated. But it is something that I think it applies broadly across all critical areas, and that's why the change.
Yeah, I guess as long as it's understood, you might have to engineer a road and retain it to provide, like you said, for life safety, fire department access, right? Or but if that qualifies as minimize and mitigate versus avoid, I guess we can move on.
All right, with that, there was one more item in 19400. This was regards to the seismic hazard standards. Currently, it says for moderate hazard seismic areas, a geological assessment may be requested by the department, and that really should be a shall be. So that was the proposed change. And just a quick note, there were no proposed changes in the March 8th draft for 19500, the so frequently flooded areas, and no additional comments or recommended changes at this time. Unless there's further discussion, I can move on to 19600, critical aquifer recharge areas. So with regards to groundwater recharge, there were the summary of the issue is the concerns for infiltration and stream flows. You know, the county's not the provider of water, but, you know, DCD could consider additional policies or development standards to address water quantity or recharge concerns. So it's expected that the habitat management plans and the wetland reports are going to address all critical area functions and values at a site-specific level. And again, staff, we've proposed, you may recall, adding groundwater recharge to the definition of functions and values in 19150. What we've proposed adding then to 19600D is that to balance competing needs for water supply while preserving essential natural functions and processes, essential for maintaining critical fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. We've added this includes, but is not limited to, ensuring groundwater recharge to maintain natural stream flows. There has been discussion. You may recall in 19600, there is a table of uses. And those uses are those which may have an impact on groundwater quality. We don't at this time know, have we proposed a similar table to address uses or thresholds for uses that may have an impact on groundwater quantity. So I'm just going to leave that out there and let everyone know that that's still the case. There's no additional standards proposed.
So in the context, sorry, in the context of avoid is the first thing in the sequence. I don't know. Can you pull up a map of our whole county and turn on the critical area recharge? It's most of the county. Is there someone that can screen share and show that?
Pull up the critical areas map if possible.
What I'm about to say is then, you know, there's lots of, you know, there's hundreds of parcels at a time that are completely in a critical area, you know, aquifer recharge. So if the first thing is avoid, does that imply, it sounds like, what's the extra step for, again, I'm going to say, I need to do an addition because my mom is aging and she needs to move in with me. Are there now extra people that I have to hire because most of the county is a critical area aquifer recharge area? Tell me about that process if most of our county is that.
You're correct that much of the county is in a critical aquifer recharge area, especially a type 2 critical aquifer recharge area. First of all, you'd have to be a regulated use in a critical aquifer recharge area for that section of code to apply. And again, like Dan was kind of speaking of, I think the same would apply. Avoidance, you know, looks different in that section that it would look in others. So, you know, there'd have to be an impact to the critical aquifer recharge area based on that regulated use. And then the hydrogeological report would, you know, be the way that they would show mitigation sequencing.
So I have to hire somebody to do that report. That's an additional cost to me.
If you fall under one of those activities with potential threat to groundwater quality that's existing in 19600, like I said, we're not proposing any additional uses or table addressing specific that are specific to groundwater quantity. The only change that we are proposing at this time is to the content of a hydrogeological report when it's already required otherwise. And that would be to address water quantity as well when that data exists. And I can get to that in a moment. That is, I think, one of the next items. But right now, we're not changing the threshold for when this hydrogeological report would be triggered.
Okay, yeah, maybe you can show me where that what the threshold is, just so I understand that. Just for the layman, the normal property owner, thinking about something like an addition.
So I'm going to pull up the map, or excuse me, the table in 19600, just so we can see.
All right.
So as you're doing that, to Commissioner Murphy's point, if I'm a homeowner, I've got a couple of neighbors who don't want to have to drill a well, and so we're going to turn it into a Group B system. You're saying we don't have to worry about avoidance?
No.
Because
these are very much like industrial commercial uses. This does not apply to single family residences. It doesn't apply to residential in general. So we're talking about gas stations, dry cleaners, golf courses, oil and gas disposal wells. They're very high intensity uses that could have an impact on groundwater quality. That's what this table addresses. So the threshold for when this hydrogeological report is needed is not proposed to change.
Okay. And mostly I'm having you go through this exercise on the recording, because theoretically this is a public process and that we would hope that the public's watching. So I just wanted them to understand that it doesn't apply to the addition on my house. Because I think a lot of people get nervous of, oh my gosh, there's more regulation and there's more process and there's more cost to me. No. To the gas station developer. I think that's worth clarifying publicly. That's all I was asking. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We also had quite a few comments on concerns about well monitoring and saltwater intrusion. So I did want to address that. There's no proposed changes at this time in the CAO. However, I did want to add that we did, as we're revising our comprehensive plan based on these public comments from both the CAO and the comp plan processes, we have considered adding a policy to address this particular concern with regards to saltwater intrusion. So monitoring that and having a process in place for it. CAO, not the most appropriate place for this time, but like I said, we are trying to address that through the comp plan process. Let's see. Similarly, another comment we got was about the critical areas ordinance and the stormwater manual and where they overlap or where there may be gaps between them. Because neither are addressing changes to subsurface drainage, stream recharge, associated impacts to aquatic life due to development. The stormwater manual is outside the scope of this update. As additional groundwater recharge development standards were also outside the scope of this update. So there's been no crosswalk or analysis between that. So I just wanted to point that out as well. Okay. And then we move on to 19700. So this is our special reports section that goes into the detail for your habitat management plans, wetland reports, et cetera. One of the comments we got was needing to quantify temporal loss. And I believe this with regard to wetland reports specifically. So what we already have provisions to address that. So that's the loss of function due to time, right? You cut down a tree, it's not going to grow back for many decades. So we've added that in the report, that they need to also provide a time frame for those impacts to be rectified. All right, this next one is from 710. This is the wetland report or wetland delineation requirements. Basically, what we've done is we've added buffer instead of just saying the wetland. Let me see, scroll over. So again, the report to provide an analysis of the functional values of existing wetlands and its buffer, and then a summary of the proposed activity and potential impacts to the wetland and its buffer. This is the wetland mitigation report. Let's see. Comment was that the wording changes need to bring the CAO closer to paying special attention to anadromous fish, which is a requirement. So what we propose doing is in the qualitative description of the functions, that it also as include moderating downstream temperatures, contributing to base flows, maintaining stream flows, or improving water quality locally and regionally as what may be included.
Kathleen, can I ask just for, I'm not clear on what that term anadromous fish is.
Which term?
So wording change needs to bring the CAO closer to paying special attention to the anadromous.
Oh, anadromous.
Yeah, sorry.
That sounds like salmon. Salmon. So they will go out to sea and come back. They move.
Okay. The thank system. You. Yeah. I just wasn't familiar with that term.
There were some proposed edits in that same section to address just watershed and cumulative impacts. And so when they're providing information on water quality, to include a description of any known or observable water quality problems at the development site and downstream until marine waters are reached. So if there is a water quality concern within that watershed, we don't want a new project coming in and exacerbating an existing problem. So we want to know if there's going to be, if there are already concerns within that system, and how that's going to be addressed. Again, getting back to no net loss. Moving on to 720, this is the habitat management plan. This was just a request to remove a dated reference. So wanting to say the current WDFW priority habitats and species management recommendations rather than providing a specific date there. And then with identification of any species of local importance, priority species, we would like to include also priority habitats. It should have been included there, or endangered, threatened, sensitive candidate species. And we had initially removed the DFW PHS database search that is no older than 1 year old from the project submittal. That really should remain. It needs to stay there. So that's in the proposal now. Uh, This next one is just there are too many ands in the sentence, so we've removed one and put it where it needs to be. Hopefully that's clear. Right, and then in 720, sorry, one moment. So adding a section similar to 715 for the wetland site protections to also in 19720. Yes.
The big issue I always have is dealing with title issues. Okay, and we're going to put a notice to title. It's all right. Say, geez, you know, potential buyer or be aware that there is a wetland buffer mitigation program here. But the second part of that is we want a legal mechanism to enforce that. Who's going to have that legal mechanism? Is it the county? Is it any interested party? I've been involved in lots of neighborhood wars where somebody says, geez, you cut too many trees. I'm sick of the county on you, and then I'm going to sue you for doing this. And it's over these fuzzy notices to title. So who is intended to have the power to enforce under these covenants?
So critical areas and buffers are protected under the code, regardless of this. This is really just a mechanism so that everyone is aware. It would be a recording that would be required
right
at the time of application approval to have that either shown on the, either if it's a face of the plat or that would be the recorded document or some other sort of like a, we have for stormwater vegetation retention covenants. So it could be a covenant that's recorded with the auditor just so it's.
I understand that, record. But what this specifically goes on to provide is and a legal site protection mechanism for the compensatory mitigation area. So who gets to enforce the legal mechanism? Is it the county? Is it the neighbor? Is it a tribal entity? Is who has a right to say you didn't do right?
It would be because it's recorded, be recorded with the auditor is the intent. So that would be something that.
Yeah, but again, I can record anything with the auditor. I can say, geez, I record easements mm-hmm. all the time that says this is an easement for ABC and the extent of this easement may be enforced by anyone using the road. Or the easement may be enforced by the Kitsap County. Or and that enforcement mechanism is huge because it means lawsuits by somebody who's mad at me. Who may or may not have a reason to do it, but I now have a handle to sue you because there's something that says in this covenant that all interested parties may bring a legal action to enforce this mitigation.
It would be treated like any other code compliance. It would be if someone had this recorded covenant that this was their wetland buffer and their mitigation area and they cleared it. It would be could be reported by the neighbor to code enforcement, and it would be pursued that way. And because it's a buffer and it's protected,
so the neighbor wouldn't have a right to sue. The county could report to code enforcement, and the county would bring an enforcement action.
Yes, it would be treated just like any other code compliance.
Okay.
Are we comfortable that that's clear enough? I mean, if Richard had to ask the question, is it clear? Is the answer clear in writing? Because again, like I said earlier, that's the intent as a comment from staff doesn't work when staff changes.
I don't think it is, Aaron. I agree with you. But in terms of getting down to the nuts and bolts of how that covenant is going to look, I'm not sure that we need to put in code, you know, that level. But I would sure, at least putting the word out to staff, that that's a big issue. May not seem like a big issue, but it is in terms of neighborhood tranquility. So that, my plan is to leave it to that, not bring a motion.
Okay. Other comments?
This next one was with regards to making sure that there's a provision that the department may complete these habitat management plans. So we wanted to clarify that they, as resources and qualified staff allow. I think that's a really important factor going into whether or not that would be applicable. Okay. Kind of circling back to the conversation we had about the hydrogeo reports and whatnot. So 7:30 is the hydrogeological report section. Again, those comments about not having enough information to quantify those changes in infiltration, what we've proposed is to include references to water quantity when appropriate. So for a hydrogeo report, when it is required, the available surface water and groundwater quality and quantity data. So again, when available, that should be provided in the report. Also, cross-references to the storm drainage report to determine potential reductions in the annual volume of water infiltration on site due to the proposed development. So again, hydrogeo report should be cross-referencing those storm drainage reports to analyze that. And then recommendations on appropriate best management practices or mitigation to assure no significant degradation of groundwater quality. And we would propose adding or quantity.
Didn't we just say we're not going to deal 5 minutes ago, we're not going to deal with quantity, that that's beyond the scope of what the county should be doing?
We do have to... aquifer recharge areas are supposed to address water quantity. We don't have any additional development standards at this time. However, when those uses are triggering that hydrogeo report, it should be addressing water quantity as well at that time.
So we don't have a standard. And so when they come in and say, here's the quality issue, we're going to say, oh, we want to know about the quantity, but we don't have a standard. We just want to know. Is that?
We don't have any thresholds. So like I said, there's those uses that could impact water quality. We don't yet have a table with other uses that may impact water quantity or maybe thresholds like over a certain percentage of impervious surface, for example. Like that hasn't been established as to what that is.
Yeah, I'm with Richard. I'm confused why we're adding to code when there's no ability to do anything with the information. I mean, what if the aquifer starts to dry out after I, you know, build a fourplex and had nothing to do with what I did? But you find that the quantity changed and you don't have any criteria on what to do with that information or whether it was or wasn't my fault or it was or wasn't a natural occurrence. Why are we adding it if we can't do anything about it then it has no value.
There could be changes in the storm drainage management to provide further infiltration, to mitigate for any loss to that watershed. Basically making sure that that water regime is not changing because of the project.
Does the person creating the report understand what's being asked of them as the professional that's not any of us? And what's the cost addition to the additional work in the report?
Just as a follow-on, again, I think the county CAO is not in the business of defining water quantity right now. But Health District does. There's other entities that do. We'll have certainly the Stormwater Manual has interest in the quantity. You're going to say, okay, someone who's looking at pesticide impact, I also want you to give me a report on quantity for this use of water use. I'm not sure it's the same expert. I'm kind of like, Commissioner Murphy is, I got nothing to do with this information. Everybody else has this information that's going to do something with it. But I, as the county, want you to hire somebody for my CAO report to give me information that I have no use for. So that's, it just strikes me as kind of the definition of regulation for no purpose.
So Richard, would you like to make a motion to strike the language because we don't understand it and no one can explain why we're doing it?
I have a question before we move into a motion. So we're talking about quantity, and in my mind, so I'm the layperson. I'm a property owner with a well that occasionally has a very low quantity, especially when we're in drier seasons, and that's becoming more and more redundant every year, right? And so is the purpose of the quantity to measure that groundwater over time, or is it to hold it to a regulation? Is it?
I think what I understand is that this report would only be issued for certain uses. I want to put in a golf course. And as part of that golf course, I'm going to put pesticides on the ground. That's going to infiltrate into the water in a critical aquifer area. I need to have an expert that says, hey, what's the impact of this pesticide going to be on the aquifer? Okay. Now, different question is, how much water is a golf course going to use? County CAO doesn't have any role in that. Water, the health district does, the PUD does, other entities do. There's a stormwater manual that says, hey, you got to do things to make sure it infiltrates back in. But there's nothing the county CAO reviewer will do with quantity information. They can't say, oh, you're using too much water, because there's no standard. They have nothing to do with that information. What I heard staff say is that, hey, at some point we may have a regulation and a standard. So let's say you have to have the report in case at some point in the future we do have a standard, then you'd apply it there. And let's do it the other way. When you got a standard, we'll do it.
Yeah, so. I think they've admitted that we don't have enough information to do anything with the information we're asking for. So I think we need to strike it. And it's covered by other jurisdictional entities.
So I'd bring a motion that we strike the words and quantity from this proposed change by staff.
I'd second it for both 8.5 and 8.9 where it applies.
Amend the motion.
Yeah, I so amend my motion. I so amend my motion.
Seconded as amended.
Discussion? Comments? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? Pass.
Stephen, were you a nay or an abstention? I didn't.
I'm a nay on it.
And actually, could I, is Commissioner Soler, are you there? Can you weigh in on your vote? In favor?
Sorry, I realized that was off.
That's okay. So you were in favor then?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, just a couple more items then. We've got Appendix B, which is our GIS sources. So this would just be updating those to the current. A lot of these were from the state agencies themselves saying, hey, this isn't how we would identify that resource. So just some changes in wording there. And then with Appendix E, we would this was the decision type table. We would need to update that to be consistent with the rest of the draft. It seems like that was inadvertently left out in our March 8th draft. So we would want to make sure that that table is consistent with code. And that takes us to the end.
Do we have any further discussions or comments? Have we covered there?
I move that we recommend that the county commissioners adopt the CAO ordinance changes as presented by staff with the recommended changes approved by the Planning Commission.
So that was so beautiful. I hate to say something, but we already actually started with that at the last meeting. So that one is still standing. That's the main motion on the table.
Okay.
Everything else was an amendment. So
we're ready to vote.
I think you made that motion at the last meeting anyway.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Okay.
So noted. So now you would just call for a vote. And this would also include all of the motions. If you want me to read them off, we can read off all the motion or the amendments. Or if you're good with them, then we don't have to do that.
Do we need to have it read?
No.
That's repeating everything. Now, the question becomes, what do we do here, Vice? What do we do next time?
So this vote will essentially adopt everything at the findings of fact. Staff will put together a nice long document with all of the changes and recommendations and everything. And then what you will do is look at that and verify and confirm that that is indeed what you voted for and recommended at this meeting. And so it's when we come back at the next week, it's not time for changes or anything like that. You're just confirming that, yes, this is what we voted on. This is what we said. And then that is the final document that will move forward to the board and through the rest of the process.
So it's appropriate for us to vote now.
Definitely.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
You want to read your motion again?
No, I think it's before us.
Further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries. Good job, everyone.
Okay.
I don't know if staff's running out, but great job of putting this together. I know this is never a fun process, but it was very well done. I appreciate the maintenance matrix, the comments, separate matrix, how you tied the comments into your final changes. I think it clearly reflects that you were listening to the public and addressed some good suggestions. So thank you for your effort.
Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, I'd reiterate, and Dan and Alexandra, thank you also for being here this evening in support of staff, and to Kathleen in particular, I know that, you know, sometimes the messenger feels like the person in the crosshairs, and that is not the intent. It is simply to make sure that, you know, sort of all angles and all views on what we are tasked with to help represent the public is reflected. So thank you for leading us through that, and it's appreciated.
Staff comments?
Nope. Appreciate all your time. I know this was a lot to go through, and thank you for your volunteering for this and your time.
Thanks. We'll next move on to the general public comment period number two. Do we have anybody left?
We do.
Do we have
actually.
Anybody that wants to comment?
We have seven strong. I've been here the whole time, I think. Yes, we've got Doug Heyman first. Bring him over.
Hi, commissioners. Thanks for all your work on this. In watching this, it's clear that this is a challenging thing to go through all these documents and take in all this information. With all due respect, though, I feel like as a public person, I've probably spent more time reading through all these, you know, critical area ordinances and various justifications for them put together by watershed, and it just kind of pains me to hear some of the questions that get asked that show that very little time was spent in really diving into this, since it's such a weighty project that needs to be done. And last comment I wanted to make is, as we're seeing a lot of clearing going on in our area, we're in North Kitsap, and north of us is 1, 2, 3 phases of arborwood, which, you know, was a complete clear cut. And any month now is going to be the next phase, which is 4, 5, and 6. And what we experienced tonight was looking out our backyard as we were making dinner, and we saw 4 deer in our yard chewing through various plants in our yard. And my wife is been in this neighborhood for over 30 years and never seen that quantity of deer come through. And I think it's just indicative of destruction of environment, and those animals need to go somewhere else to find food. So I would just appreciate really weighing, you know, the needs of developers and commerce with the environmental issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
Yes, we've got, I believe it is Beth Nichols next.
Good evening, commissioners, and thank you for all the work you've done. This is a huge lift, and I know it's taken a lot of time. I've been trying to follow all of this pretty clearly, but It is rather confusing, but I was really concerned about striking the discussion or the monitoring of quantity of water. I feel like that is such an important issue for our county because we are so reliant on aquifers, and our water supply right now is adequate. But if you're paying attention to climate change and diminishing water supply in other areas, including places on the Olympic Peninsula, who would think we could really hit a critical point with water supply? And it is something, even if we don't have the metrics to measure right now, we really have to pay attention to water supply, aquifer recharge, and making sure that our water is getting back into the hydrology so that we have water to drink and we can sustain life here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is that the end of public comments?
We have one more. We've got Marla Powers coming over.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thanks. My name is Marla Powers. I'm an environmental planner for the Port Gamble Sklallam Tribe. And I do appreciate staff's and Planning Commission's discussion tonight and prior nights. This is a big lift. I did want to kind of iterate what what's already been said in public comment is that the aquifer recharge section that was just discussed by the Planning Commission, adding the quantity to the report is imperative. We know growth, development, and climate change are going to have significant impacts on the water that's available to people and the environment, and just being able to track that and understand the impacts to the aquifer is imperative. Even though we don't have a standard yet, you can see one coming down the road. Like it will come, and we will be having to deal with it. So if we can set something up now to be able to address that or track it, it would be important. I also want to mention that the water quantity directly affects senior tribal water rights, and the tribe wants to make sure that they have their water rights protected, and their habitat for imperative species like the salmon is also protected. As far as the balancing comments, I heard a lot of comments, almost 95% based on development. What is this going to cost the property owner? What is this going to cost the developer? How much more can we reduce buffers? And it would be really nice to hear from the Planning Commission a balanced discussion between what people need and what our environment needs. Because if we cut everything down and develop all these multifamily, single family homes, we're going to create a heat island. We're going to not have water to infiltrate. We won't have anything to drink. We won't have a good place or a good home to be for us and for others. So a balance of comments. I know the comments from the public were balanced relating to the preservation and protection of the environment and the need for development. And I would have liked to see more of those balanced discussions from the Planning Commission. And just one final note that it did feel like a lot. There were a number of discussion items that could have been taken further, and some additional reports or comebacks from staff were needed for this Planning Commission to make the decision to move forward, such as the change in buffers for type O. I just want to make you aware, if you weren't already, that there is an extension for the CAO update to next year. And so more time can be given to address many of these comments more clearly and fully before moving ahead with the changes that you've already proposed. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one more speaker also.
One now. More to go.
We've got Rod Malcolm from Suquamish Tribe.
Good evening. I'm Rod Malcolm. I'm a biologist for the Suquamish Tribe. I participated in the CAO update since the county invited comment. You've had a lot on your plate to look at, some very technical. I'm just going to restrict my comments to the quantification of infiltration issue. To quantify changes in infiltration due to development should not be a major cost at all. The stormwater drainage plans already have that information in them. It's simply rearranging the data in a different way. Instead of looking at a specific storm event, it's looking at it cumulatively. So there should be no data collection cost at all associated with it, just the staff time just to redo the Excel table. And it's important that the county understands changes in groundwater infiltration over the long term arising from development for the reasons that the previous speakers have done. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And we have one more.
One more.
Mr. Lubischer.
Good evening. My name is Joe Lubischer from Indianola. You may or may not recall, I addressed you in May on the implementation of the no net loss criteria. And the criteria itself is not new. It had different wording before. But in reading a number of wetland reports and buffer decisions by applicants in the county, it's clear to me that we really need some standards for implementing no net loss. I think it's fair to say that the wetland specialist reports I've read are mere hand waving. They lack any substantive technical analysis or comparative review. So I just want to get that in the record. And I think it's an ongoing issue. It's an ongoing problem. And there needs to be a solution for that specific problem. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other further comments?
I don't see anyone.
Any comments for the good of the order?
I want to thank you, Commissioner Beam, for getting us through this long evening, and staff for the great work. So I feel like I'm learning every time, and I really do appreciate the comments shared by the public. I appreciate those comments. Thank you.
Next general meeting for us is 2 July at 5:30.
Yes, that's correct.
Any objections? Closed.
All right. Thank you, everyone.